What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
When you have health insurance, it's easy to forget about your out-of-pocket costs. That can be a lot of money. But are your bills accurate? Well, it's estimated that over 50% of medical bills contain errors. HealthLock can help you. HealthLock technology securely connects with your insurance and flags any overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. To date, HealthLock has helped its members save over $130 million. So to save, visit HealthLock.com today. That's HealthLock.com today.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200K for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does all the work for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billing, scheduling, and more. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. Visit Picasso to see thousands of listings. That's PACASO.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places. Welcome to Forward Thinking.
Hey there, and welcome to Forward Thinking, the podcast that looks at the future and says, we're going to rock down to Electric Avenue, and then we'll take it higher. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Lauren Polkabon.
And I'm Joe McCormick. That was a good one.
Thank you.
It was relevant to today because we're going to talk about something that has to do with electricity.
Yes. In fact, we're going to talk about batteries and why, you know, I think in any discussion about the future and we talk about like the amazing electronics we have right now in the present, there's always this discussion that happens about why aren't batteries better yet?
Yeah, people overlook the fact that batteries are awesome.
They are.
Like, they don't pay attention to batteries being such an integral part of all the technologies we really enjoy.
Well, it's really easy also to kind of wench on about how, you know, oh, my iPhone only keeps a charge for a day.
Right.
It keeps a charge for a day, y'all.
It keeps a charge at all. Like, you can unplug it from the wall and it still works.
Yeah.
That's pretty incredible. In itself, I mean, imagine if every electronic device you owned had to constantly be plugged into the power grid in order to work, or
right,
have an internal combustion engine or something like that.
Yeah, everything is either connected by cables or has some other form of generating power. But
on board, yeah.
The battery lets us store energy for later use.
Right. So you don't have to use all this energy now. You can use it later if you want. You can use it at different times later on.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that's actually pretty incredible. It enables all kinds of things we don't even take the time to think about.
That's right. So batteries, they share a lot in common with another technology, the fuel cell. Fuel cells are different from batteries in that with fuel cells, you keep adding fuel into the compartments of the fuel cell, and then you generate electricity, and you have to keep filling up the fuel cell with fuel in order for it to continue to generate electricity. Batteries have an electrochemical reaction at the heart of them, just like a fuel cell does, but everything is contained within the battery itself.
Right. Batteries are, at bottom, I would say a good way to put it is they're an easy way to get electricity from chemistry.
Yes. Yeah, so you have these chemicals that are reacting to produce an excess of electrons, something that happens with certain chemical reactions. So you get this excess of electrons that are gathering on one side of the battery. That's the anode side. And then you have an electrical difference between the anode side of the battery and the cathode side of the battery.
Right. So if you think about a battery with two sides, the anode side has all these little minus symbols on it.
Yeah, it's negatively charged.
Yeah, and those minus symbols, if they could, would really love to go to the opposite end of the battery.
Right.
It's almost as if you've got a pipe full of water that's tilted way up on one side at the anode side, and down at the bottom is the cathode side.
Right, and there's something that's blocking the water from running down that pipe. So if you were to create a pathway, a different path that has this lots of little curly cues and crazy straw-like contraptions and maybe even a little water wheel in there, but it led to that bottom side and you allowed gravity to do the work, the direct route down to the bottom would be blocked off, but this other pathway would be open and the water would flow through. That's kind of similar to what happens with a circuit. A circuit is where you've built a pathway for electrons to move from the anode to the cathode so that you have the electrons moving over into to fill up the holes, the positive slots, on the opposite side of the battery.
And while they're in motion, you can make them do work.
Yeah,
turn those little water wheels, those little electron wheels.
Yeah, if you don't have a load attached to the circuit, you're going to burn out that battery really quickly, because all it's doing is electrons are just going to rush from one side to the other through this pathway. But by putting a load on there, then the electrons have to do work along the way. So that might be something as simple as lighting an LED, or it could be something as complicated as playing my favorite music on my MP3 player, because that it's drawing its power from the battery. Here's the thing about these electrochemical results, right? You know, the electrochemical reactions. You get this stuff that essentially becomes inert, right? It's no longer able to produce the electrons needed to continue this reaction. You're essentially using up the useful chemicals within the battery. They are turning into something that is no longer going to generate those electrons. This is when a battery goes dead, when you've completely drained the charge and there's not enough not enough active chemicals left within the battery to keep it going. So, you know, you might have a battery, like you may have used a flashlight where it starts going dim before it goes out. It's because the battery is able to still generate some electricity flow, but not enough to continuously power that bulb.
Now, that's if you have what's called a primary cell battery.
Yes.
Or a single-use battery.
Right.
But there are also batteries called secondary cell batteries. These are rechargeable batteries.
Yeah. You're essentially reversing the chemical reaction by reversing the flow of electricity.
That's right.
You reverse the polarity.
So you just think about it working the opposite way.
Yeah.
Whereas when the battery is discharging, you're having electrons flowing out of one end to the other and doing work on the way. To make it go back the other way, you put work into the battery to force electrons to go back from the cathode to the anode.
Right. Now, the issue here is that as you do this over and over, you start to lose some of the active ingredients inside this battery.
They start degrading.
Yeah. So eventually the battery will still be dead, or at least will be it'll store only enough juice for it to be moderately useful, and then you have to replace it with a new battery anyway. But it does mean you can reuse the same battery multiple times before that actually happens. It's not like, you know, most batteries have lots of cycles, charge cycles they can go through before they're inactive. But yes, that is the major difference. So a primary cell, once it's used up, that's it. You cannot recharge it. You gotta toss it away, especially since most of these chemicals, when they're done, are corrosive and will eventually start to eat through the casing of the battery itself and can cause damage to people and property.
Well, when you think about a battery, it's kind of amazing that they're as safe as they are, because what is a battery? Well, it's a huge amount of potential energy stored up into a tight little space.
Yeah. Yeah. You've got essentially amounts to a paste that can create this chemical reaction.
Although this is why, I mean, one of the reasons why you don't generally want to apply, say, fire to batteries.
Oh, yeah. And why sometimes batteries can catch on fire.
Right.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, there's also issue with other, you know, basic things in electronics. Like, you've probably heard the term resistance. Generally, we talk about resistance in the way that that something will start to generate heat, because there's not a perfect path for the electrons to flow through. There's going to be some energy lost in the form of heat. And if you're charging a secondary cell battery for too long, or if you have placed a rechargeable battery in the wrong type of charger, then you can overcharge one of those batteries and you end up generating a lot of resistance and damaging the battery in the process, which could result in something as catastrophic as a fire, or it could just significantly decrease the useful life of that rechargeable battery. Either way, it's a negative outcome. This one is obviously way more negative than the other one, but yeah, that's an issue.
Okay, so let's talk about what are the main ways of making batteries today.
You mean like the different types?
Yeah.
Sure. Okay. So we got alkaline cell. Those are the most common.
Yeah. If you go out to the store and buy you some AA batteries, they're probably alkaline cell batteries.
If it doesn't say rechargeable on them, mm-hmm. then they are most likely alkaline batteries. There are also lithium non-rechargeable batteries. Those do exist too. So those mm-hmm. are also primary cell batteries. But, you're going to see alkaline ones, which are using sodium hydroxide or potassium hydroxide as the electrolyte. And like we said, not rechargeable. They produce about 1.54 volts. And the chemicals created as the battery produces electricity are corrosive. These are the ones that are going to eat through that zinc case eventually and possibly cause damage. So you have to be really careful when you get rid of them. They are the most widely used batteries in the world. They're inexpensive, relatively speaking. I know that anyone who has gone to a convenience store because they desperately needed to get those AA batteries for something, or mine is always getting like the 9-volt battery for the smoke detector when I realize that, oh, it's beeping, I need to go out and get a battery, and the closest place is this convenience store. Then it feels like it's the most expensive thing I've ever seen in my life. But in general, they're much more practical and cheap than, say, the rechargeable batteries often are.
Okay, but let's say you go to traffic court and you do what they actually tell you to do, but nobody does, which is take the battery out of your cell phone. What's in that battery?
So those are lithium ion batteries. These are the batteries that, okay, so while alkaline batteries are technically the most popular batteries in the world, the ones that people are having more and more experience with these days tend to be in the lithium ion side.
Because it would be a huge pain in the butt to have to change out the AAs in your cell phone.
Yeah. Not that there aren't phones out there that do that kind of thing.
Certainly.
You know, you need a good burner phone, then obviously. But no, lithium ion batteries are rechargeable. They are often found in things like computers and electronics, as well as other places. They store about 150 watt hours per kilogram. So their energy density is pretty good, especially compared to some of the other batteries.
Lithium ion are sort of the primo consumer rechargeable batteries these days.
Yeah, there are. Some people would say this is the barrier that's holding us back, right? The lithium ion is as good as we can do right now. But there are people who are working on creating better battery technologies in the future, and we're going to talk a lot about those in just a little bit. But right now, lithium ion, I mean, that's when you look at the different kinds of batteries that are out there and the energy density is really, we're talking about how much energy is packed in per unit of weight. And when it comes to packing a punch, lithium ion has one of the bigger punches in the game.
Yeah. Even then, it's typically described in terms of a few hundred watt hours per kilogram.
Yeah. We're not at a point where it's equivalent to, say, the amount of power you would generate from an internal combustion engine with a car.
Oh,
not
certainly
even
not.
Close.
But the voltage isn't bad for these guys compared to the size of those alkaline batteries.
Yeah.
Right?
We're talking like 4 volts here. So that's for a regular lithium ion cell.
Okay, but let's say I pop open the hood of my old car, my old rusty beat up car, and look at the battery in there. What is it probably?
That's more than likely than not a lead acid battery. So that we're not talking about electric vehicles or hybrid vehicles necessarily here, but in your classic internal combustion engine, that needs to have a battery so that it can fire off the spark plugs and also operate all the cabin electronics, that kind of stuff. You're talking about a lead acid battery. These do not have a very good energy density.
No, not at all.
25 watt hours per kilogram. Compare that back to the lithium ion. It's just not, doesn't pack a huge wallop.
No, what these things are really good at is hanging out and then giving you a big jolt right when you need it.
Yeah, and they last a really long time. And, you know, it's another one of those things where if you start to run out of juice, you really need to go and get a new battery. You're not going to be recharging these. Like this, I'm sure most of us have been a situation either where we had to get a jump start from someone or we helped someone else get a jump start from our vehicles. So usually that means you just give it enough electricity for the vehicle to start up so you can get it to the closest place where you can get a replacement battery.
Yeah.
But yeah, lead acid. And you know, it's pretty much what it sounds like. You've got some electrodes made out of lead. And you've got sulfuric acid as a component. So this is also a battery you do not want to bust open.
Yeah,
it's got some caustic material in there.
Don't give it to your baby to play with.
No, this is dangerous stuff.
After that, you've also got nickel-based batteries, don't you? Like you used to have nickel-cadmium a lot. Now you've got nickel-metal hydride.
Yep, and these are often used in hybrid vehicles. They use rare earth materials. We talked a lot about that in our last episode about solar-powered vehicles, the idea of rare earth elements and why that's such a big issue in electronics. It's a big issue with batteries as well. There are a lot of different batteries that are reliant upon some form of rare earth element in as part of the components. They also combine these rare earth elements with some stuff that's a lot more common, like nickel being a big one, aluminum, cobalt, other stuff as well. They store about 100 watt hours per kilogram. So again, not as energy dense as lithium ion, but much more so than, say, lead acid. And they also are rechargeable. So you can just buy these. There are several that are in the same kind of style as alkaline batteries. So most of the time when you see a rechargeable battery, that's like a AA rechargeable battery, it ends up being a nickel metal hydride. So those are your basic types. I mean, there are others as well. Of course, we didn't even go into the historic batteries like voltaic piles and all that kind of stuff, which is fascinating.
You don't really use those to power a laptop or
You might use it as a science fair project, right? to build your own homemade battery.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's not something that's going to be used in any real capacity for modern conveniences or anything like that.
Okay, well, let's talk about the problems that exist with the batteries we have today and how could batteries be improved for future uses.
So that energy density thing.
Yeah.
That's a big one. That's a big limiting factor.
It's big, especially for, say, like hybrid or electric vehicles.
Sure. Yeah. If you know, one of the complaints a lot of people had, or at least one of the thing, like a misgiving people have about electric vehicles is this idea of, I don't want to be driving this vehicle and then run out of charge and then be stranded somewhere. And then even if I'm someplace where I can plug in, I'm stuck there for hours on end until I get a full charge. Never mind the fact that most of us drive well below the driving range of one of these electrical vehicles in our day-to-day activities. So if you're talking about using an electric vehicle for just your daily driving, like, you know, you're driving around from to and from work, that kind of stuff, generally speaking, you're pretty much okay because you can just recharge at night and you're fine. It's
sure.
when you want to go on an extended trip, then it might become more of a concern.
I think also most people who have driven a gas engine car have at some point run out of gas because they really thought that they should go to Starbucks first before they hit the gas station or
et cetera. E doesn't mean empty. E means enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a buddy who used to say that until he had to call AAA to help him out.
One too many times.
Yeah. So yeah, here's the thing though with energy densities. There's only so much we can do because unlike microprocessors, you know Moore's law, this idea that within every 2 years or so, the power of microprocessors doubles because we are able to cram more discrete components onto these chips. Mm-hmm. We're able to miniaturize. That doesn't apply to batteries because we're talking about chemical reactions, not some sort of electric circuitry. So we can make electronics more efficient so they sip less power, but we can't, you know, just make a magical miniaturization machine for batteries and get the same kind of advances that we've seen on the electronics side.
Although certainly different chemicals are more efficient at creating
these
reactions.
Yes. So we can't make chemicals We can't make the same chemicals better at what they do necessarily, but we can experiment with different chemicals and different approaches to making these chemicals and exploiting different physical properties of materials to make better batteries.
Right. In any case, it's going to be really hard to create a battery that comes close to competing with the energy density of gasoline.
Yes.
That's one of the main appeals of gasoline today. I mean, it's cheap and it's got great energy density. So the energy density of gasoline is something like 12,000 or 13,000 watt hours per kilogram. Compare that to the lithium ion batteries, which store, as we said, like 150 or maybe a few hundred watt hours per kilogram. Oof. So it's a huge difference. If you're trying to make electric cars an attractive proposition, increasing the energy density of electric batteries is huge. What you end up with is this large, extremely heavy brick in your car that won't let you drive as far as a tank of gasoline. Now, as you've said, it's exactly right that people have misconceptions about the range anxiety of electric cars.
Well, there's also the issue that you're talking about 12,000 to 13,000 watt hours per kilogram energy density of gasoline, but an internal combustion engine is not as efficient as an electric motor.
That's exactly right. So a lot of that energy is lost as heat.
Yeah,
a ton of it. Internal combustion engine, but still, that difference is gigantic.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about some ways that energy density gap might be closed by different battery designs.
But we've still got a lot more problems that batteries have that we have to contend with. Some, depending upon what approach we use, some of these are bigger concerns than others. Some batteries are more prone to some of these problems than others. So one of them is the self-discharge problem.
Yeah.
So this is where you've taken a battery out of the package, you put it into some form of electronics, and it starts to essentially leak electricity. It's leaking its effectiveness. And depending upon the type of battery, that could be significant. We're talking like up to 20% in the first day.
Oh, wow.
Losing 20% of the charge. So it goes from 100% charge to 80% charge. You haven't even turned anything on. You've just plugged the battery in and let it sit.
Just from the circuit being completed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, not all of them are prone to this. Nickel metal hydride are particularly vulnerable to self-discharge, but not everything is. And if you are storing stuff in a cool, not cold, but a cool environment, then you slow this down. Because we're talking about chemical reactions. Chemical reactions tend to happen faster when you apply heat, and they tend to be slower when you take heat away. But you don't want to put batteries in the fridge or freezer, because then you just slow it down so much that it's going to take you forever for the juice to start flowing when you actually want to use the batteries.
I've heard this myth before that you should put batteries in the freezer to prolong their life. Apparently, that is not true. In fact, the battery manufacturers have facts on their website telling you not to do this because it actually doesn't improve it. And in fact, if you put a battery in the freezer, they say that the condensation that forms on it could cause damage to the battery and in fact cut down on its life.
Well, when you see with electric vehicles, producers, one of the things they talk about is testing the electrical vehicles in cold environments, because there's this concern that the cold weather would retard the function of the battery, so you wouldn't get your vehicle started when you would want to. So let's say you're heading out the door to go to work, and you have to wait, you know, a half hour for the car to warm up enough to be able to drive it. That would be another example. Then you have the memory effect. This is when you recharge a device, and each time you're recharging it, it's not quite going all the way back to 100%, normally because you have the old rechargeable batteries really had this problem where, let's say I've got my cell phone and I plug it in and I let it charge up to 80%. And then I think, oh, that's good enough. I need my phone. I'm going on my way. And I unplug it and I go on my merry little way. The next time I plug in my cell phone, it charges up. But now the new 100% is just the 80% of what its original full capacity was. So it gets up to 80% of its original full capacity, and that's the new 100%.
It goes, yay, I'm done, and stops.
Yeah, yeah, I don't have access to that extra 20% power. So now I'm saying, you know, this phone used to give me like 24 hours of service before I had to plug it in, but now I'm only getting like 18 or 16 hours or whatever. That would be the memory effect. And with some batteries, it's worse than with others. There are other things that come into play here. Sometimes it's not just the battery. There might be a sensor in the electronic device you're using, and that can get out of whack, where the sensor actually shuts down the recharging So it's trying to avoid overcharging the battery, right? Mm-hmm. So the sensor shuts it down. The battery has not received a full charge. And it's because the sensor needs to be recalibrated. Usually you have to, you know, reset a phone or other computer device, sometimes completely power it down and power it back up. And then it normally will reset. That's usually one of the basic things that happens with electronics. But that's also an issue. So sometimes it's not just the battery. Sometimes it's the electronic device itself. Then we have overcharging, which I've already mentioned. This idea that you have poured too much energy into the battery in some way or another, and that ends up damaging the battery, sometimes catastrophically. More often than not, you've just reduced the useful life of the battery. Then there's charging cycles. This is kind of similar to the memory effect. It's really the number of times you can fully drain and fully recharge a battery and expect it to give you useful operating life. So you usually get this in the number of thousands.
Sure. Again, that's the degradation of the chemicals over a period of time.
Right. Yeah. So even rechargeable batteries are not going to stay absolutely perfect forever. They're going to degrade, some more slowly than others. And eventually you will need to replace them, which is why you get people who not to pick on a particular company, but people who talk about Apple products saying that, you know, they make the batteries inaccessible. There's no way to get in there and change out the battery. Now, for most of us, we're probably going to upgrade our phones more frequently than it would require you
become
to worry
an issue
about the battery.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, especially when it comes to Apple, which wants you to upgrade your phones twice as frequently as anybody else does. Although I'm an Android user and a new Android phone comes out every week, so I get phone envy all the time. That's another issue. Then, it's just, again, we don't have a magic switch to make battery technology catch up to other types of tech that we rely upon in our electronics. So this is one of those conversations that's ongoing about, hey, my computer can do all this amazing stuff. Why haven't batteries kept pace, right?
Right. Well, one of the reasons is, as we talked about before, you can't just keep scaling down. It's not a direct line of descent. It's not like you're just doing what you did before, but packing a little bit more power into it.
Right.
You have to explore new areas of chemical configuration.
Yep.
And there is one big one that people have talked about, especially in the area of energy density, and that's lithium air batteries.
Yeah, now this is some crazy energy density. We're actually talking about approaching the energy density of something like gasoline.
Yeah, lithium air based batteries have the potential to offer way, way more energy density than standard lithium ion batteries. In fact, I've seen claims that they could reach up to, say, 11,000 watt hours per kilogram. Now, remember, the watt hours per kilogram of gasoline were just like 12 or 13,000.
Right.
So that's really close. And then when you couple that with the fact that electrical motors are actually much more efficient, as we said, than internal combustion engines, you've actually got a more efficient total system there. And that's really cool. Okay, so how does it work?
I got this. So we're talking about the process of oxidation. This is the same process where we see rust forming. I mean, you know, it's the whole oxidizing thing, except in the case of lithium, we're talking about electrons being released as part of this process.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is where you've got the anode. And
it's the same model as old batteries.
Yeah.
You're just talking about different chemicals.
Exactly.
At the ends.
Yeah. You still have an anode and you still have a cathode. You still have electrons being generated and released, or at least released really is what you're not generating them. You're just releasing them into the wild. So the anode side is the oxidation of lithium. And then the cathode side is where you have a reduction of oxygen, and that induces the electron flow. So it's not the easiest thing in the world to do. We've got lots of different groups working on lithium air batteries, but it's difficult to make a stable one.
It's more than difficult. I mean, it's a real problem right now. In fact, I've seen it described as, it's not just one research problem, it's multiple research problems at the same time. But yeah, like we said, people are actually working on it. IBM has a lithium air battery research project. It's called Battery 500, and their stated goals are to create a powerful new battery for electric cars that is A, as good as gasoline, B, gets 500 miles or 800 kilometers range per charge, And C has a total electric drive system comparable in size, weight, and price to a gasoline drivetrain.
Ooh.
Though they admit that, quote, this is a very high risk, very high reward, long horizon project. So they're saying in their sort of mission statement that's public facing that this may very well not work. It's
yeah.
just sort of research into something that would be a big score if it does.
Mm-hmm. Right.
What the timetable they gave was 3 years basic science to know what the commercial applications would be before around 2020.
Right. So, yeah, this is one of those things that could end up paying off, but it may be that we aren't able to find a practical means of harnessing it. We know it works. The principle is sound. It's just making it practical so that we can actually harness it. That's the problem.
Yeah, there are just all kinds of problems with implementing this. One that I read about is the fact that lithium has an explosive reaction with water when they come in contact.
Oh, right, yeah, which is problematic because water exists.
Well, water exists as vapor in the air, and if you're talking about exposing this lithium to the air, that's a problem.
It becomes an external combustion engine.
Yeah. So you'd obviously need to find ways around that. And they're just, it's really tricky from what I understand.
Well, then you also have another potential lithium solution, lithium silicon batteries. So your lithium ion batteries, usually they have graphene as part of the components. Now graphene is okay, but silicon actually is able to hold a much larger energy density than the graphene-based lithium-ion batteries.
It's hypothetically like 10 times as energy dense.
So yeah, you've got, you know, if you're talking 150 watt-hours, now you're talking, you know, 1,500 watt-hours. That's a big leap. But there's another problem, which is that when silicon starts to, when you're charging this battery, the silicon starts to swell to 300% its normal volume. So designing a battery that can handle that, the fact that you have a component that's going to grow in size by 300% of volume, that is an engineering problem too.
Although there is research that is looking at making this possible. A team from Stanford has been working on a pomegranate-inspired design wherein nanoparticles of silicon are encased in carbon capsules and then kind of clustered together like seeds in tougher carbon rinds. And this helps, A, protect that super expansive and also very brittle silicon from bursting out of the battery or falling apart during charging, and B, minimizes its contact with the electrolyte, which helps prevent buildup of this, like, reaction gunk on the anode that will degrade the battery's performance pretty quickly.
Right, right, yeah. It's kind of, think about it as some folks get stuck in the doorway and you can't have as many electrons pass through the path because you've got this buildup. All right, so We got pomegranate, so we got our fruit-based batteries, as I understand it, because I was totally listening just then.
Though not the only batteries from the produce section, as you will soon learn.
But no, Lauren, I know that you also have something in here about liquid-based batteries. So are you telling me we're going back in time? Because I'm thinking like the ancient batteries here that had, you know,
Baghdad battery.
Yeah, or even voltaic piles and things like that. Is that?
I kind of like that, except a lot more efficient and less dangerous.
Oh, okay. These
are sometimes called flow batteries. And the idea here is that you've got two chemical storage tanks hooked up to an electrochemical conversion hardware piece thing. And it's
that's technical.
Thingy is the very technical term. Yeah. So the fluids are pumped through, and then the amount of energy that can be stored is really only limited by the capacity of your tanks. This tech is really being looked at for solar and wind energy kind of applications in order to make them cheaper. You know, solid batteries are so expensive and so heavy, and you need a lot of them to effectively store the energy that's created through these greener methods. And this could kind of solve that. Traditionally, the electrolytes in flow batteries have been expensive metals like vanadium. I don't even know how to say that. I didn't look it up.
I've never even heard of that.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's what Captain America's shield's made out of. No, wait, that's vibranium.
That's vibranium.
I got to go watch Brain Stuff again.
I'm looking this up because I don't believe it's real. No, it's real. You're right. You're right.
It is unobtainium. No, these things are in use right now in like Japan and China to help manage the power grid. So they are, in fact, effective, but at the price of some $700 per kilowatt hour of storage capacity.
That's expensive.
Like on the average, It can go way up from there. According to the U.S. Department of Energy, they need to hit more like $100 per kilowatt hour to make wind farms really economical.
Now, all right, so you talked about pomegranates. And now on the next note on our list here, I see rhubarb. What?
Even
what is
better
going
than
on?
A potato battery. It's not really rhubarb. It's just similar to a molecule found in rhubarb.
It's almost identical to a molecule that occurs naturally in rhubarb. This is research out of Harvard. They've been making a carbon-based molecule called a quinone. Yes, I'm going to say quinone. It's found in green plants and crude oil and can be pretty cheaply turned into this thing that you can use. The molecules in this case are housed in water, which makes the batteries pretty non-flammable, which is excellent all around.
Yeah.
It's performing as well as the vanadium so far and isn't degrading after repeated cycles, although it needs a whole lot more testing. I mean, they've got like 100 cycles under their belt, and they would need thousands and thousands to...
So the vanadium, the big problem there was that they're really expensive. You were talking about like $750 per kilowatt hour, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
How does this approach measure up compared to that?
According to the Harvard team, it could reduce storage costs to $27 per kilowatt hour.
Wow.
How does that compare to a potato battery?
I don't know.
We'll get right on
favorably.
That, Joe.
What is the price per pound of rhubarb versus potatoes?
Rhubarb is fairly expensive, but you can grow it in many home gardens.
We're looking at a molecule here that we can synthesize. Okay, we have the technology.
What about the problem of disposing of batteries? Because batteries, like we've been talking about, tend to have things in them that you just don't want to get into, say, your water supply or in your body.
Yeah, and there are certain things, like there are people who their lives depend upon medical devices that are implanted inside their bodies that require some form of power, usually provided by a battery. So what solutions are we looking at there?
Researchers are indeed working on it. There's a team out of Carnegie Mellon that's created a sodium ion battery using the melanin from cuttlefish ink for the anode and manganese oxide as the cathode. The whole thing breaks down into non-toxic materials in the body. So, you know, like imagine being able to swallow a smart pill that can release drugs after it's cleared the stomach. The stomach, of course, will destroy a lot of medications. That's why, for example, patients who have arthritis have to go into a doctor's office for injections.
And then this way you could actually get more of the effective ingredient in that medication to enter your system. You wouldn't lose so much of it through, you know, just going through your stomach, which also means that you could have a much more controlled dosage, which also means that you have reduced side effects, if there are any. So, yeah, there are a lot of reasons why this would be a huge benefit to medicine.
Right. Or, you know, okay, forget about wearable technology. What if you had swallowable fitness tech?
Okay, so, yeah, like what if I could put something inside me that can completely monitor everything from caloric burn to caloric intake? Like there are devices out there right now that say they can measure your caloric intake, but really the technology right now for us to be able to measure that non-invasively exists, but it exists in like big old macro bulk format. It's usually a machine where you connect a device that's using light to go through your veins in, say, your earlobe or your fingertips. So that's not something that you can easily wear, but this could actually change that.
Yeah, or something that dispenses emergency medication. Like, for example, if your doctor knows that you are prone to epileptic seizures, you could have something that could be triggered by that seizure to control it for you right away. Or, hey, outside the human body, these things could be useful as well. Like if you have an oil spill or another disaster, a whole army of these things could be dropped into the site and they would biodegrade into something that isn't harmful, isn't causing more harm.
Right, right. So it's not further damaging the environment, and yet it's letting you keep an eye on what the conditions are. That definitely does have its use.
Sure. And this isn't the only, this Carnegie Mellon cuttlefish battery is not the only one in development. All of the ones that I created are food-based, aren't they? They're
just
the ones that I wrote about are food-based.
Now I'm just thinking, like, this car's got 40 cuttlefish power.
I absolutely want that measurement.
Cuttlefish are not for eating. They're for cuddling.
That's true.
That's a
cuttlefish,
not a
cuttlefish. Don't eat cuttlefish. They're very nice. I get really upset about cuttlefish. Okay, but so there's a team from the University of Illinois that is using magnesium foil anodes and cathodes made of stuff like iron or tungsten, all of which are non-toxic in low concentrations, and a saline electrolyte and biodegradable packaging. They're estimating that with this particular configuration, realistically, with further research and improvements, could create a quarter centimeter square by 1 micrometer thick battery that could power a wireless implant for an entire day.
Wow. That's pretty incredible stuff.
That's thinner than a sheet of paper. It's tiny.
Now, Joe.
Pretty awesome.
Have you heard about the robust, affordable, next generation energy storage systems?
AKA Robust, Affordable, Next Generation Energy Storage Systems Program.
Also known as RANGE.
Yes, RANGE.
Thank you for repeating exactly what I said, adding program at the bottom of it.
Yeah, I read an interview with ARPA-E's Deputy Director, Dr. Cheryl Martin, from last year, and she mentioned some cool battery innovation ideas that are going on under the RANGE program, and that's having to do with vehicles mostly. So she talks about the idea of like doubling the role of a battery in an electric car. So it's not just a battery. It's not just providing energy, but it also plays some other important function within the structure of the car that helps you cut down on the total weight of the car. Say, for example, it absorbs impact and crashes. She actually talked about that there was a project led by Oak Ridge National Laboratory where they're creating an impact-resistant electrolyte. So when the battery gets hit with a strong force, like if you're in a car crash, the liquid electrolyte suddenly thickens up, and it absorbs the energy from the impact.
You know, I've also heard interesting ideas of incorporating new battery structures. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's using the same chemicals, essentially, as sort of the stuff you're talking about here, but actually incorporating it so it ends up, like, molded to the frame of the vehicle itself.
Yeah, like new solid state batteries to sort of fit the natural structure of the car instead of just being this big heavy brick sitting in part of the car.
That's pretty cool.
Or on a much smaller scale, if you use our good friend nanotechnology in order to create materials that have a larger surface area, mm-hmm. then you can improve some of the efficiency of some of this stuff.
Yeah, and again, a lot of the improvements in batteries aren't from the batteries themselves. It's figuring out how to make more efficient electronics that make better use of the power. So that if we do get to a point where we have a real battery breakthrough, like some of the ones that are potentially could happen based on the ones we've just been talking about, we're really sitting pretty then.
But what about electronics that don't need batteries at all?
So are we going, what, back to plugging it into the wall? Is that what you're talking about?
No, we're talking about wireless electronics that don't need batteries.
Wait, are you talking about like Tesla broadcast towers zapping?
No. We're not talking about, say, inductive coupling or any of these things we've talked about before, where it is possible to, say, charge a device without necessarily touching it.
Sure. An induction, I mean, for example, in some of those medical applications that we were talking about a moment ago, is really great for stuff that could be implanted near the skin, but if you needed to swallow it or put it behind a bone or something like that, that would make it really difficult to use.
Yeah.
Right. So that's not what we're talking about. Instead, we're talking about very small devices that work on what's called ambient backscatter. So last year, researchers at the University of Washington announced they had created a group of small communication devices that did not require batteries, but they were able to transmit signals based on ambient backscatter from the transmissions that are going on all around us. So you've got TV towers broadcasting signals and your wireless router broadcasting signals. Basically, they designed them in such a way to reflect ambient transmission signals for their own purposes, to sort of create a Morse code of automatic reflection without having local power. So these little devices can communicate with devices around them. Now, this probably can't be translated into any big power hungry device like a laptop or a smartphone, but it might be really useful for small sensors and communication tags that would be really important if we were ever going to create, say, an Internet of Things in our home.
Now, this really reminds me of, I don't know if you guys ever built your own radio, but the old crystal radio kits, there were some where you could just, you'd build a little crystal radio and you didn't have a battery. You had no power source whatsoever, except you used the antenna, and the antenna would pick up radio waves, and that would generate just enough power to operate the radio itself. It doesn't need another source. This sounds to me like engineers have figured out a similar way, based on that same principle, to make actual use of that. Because the little radio transmitter you could make where it doesn't need external power, it required an incredibly long antenna to work properly.
Like, sure.
It was not something that was practical. It was more of a, here's how you can learn about electronics and radios But not like this is going to be something that you're not going to be jamming in your dorm room,
yeah,
listening to Pink Floyd on this thing.
The models that I saw were less than palm size.
Yeah, they were small,
a few inches across. Yeah,
yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, one of the really cool things about it that I saw on a video demonstrating this idea was that it could make, in a way, ideas along these lines could make a technology I've been wanting for so long, which is the control F function for the real world.
So, wow. Like, when you have lost your keys despite having had them in your hand no less than 5 minutes ago.
Right, yeah. So the idea they showed was that, say, you've got your keys or maybe your couch stamped with these communication devices. They don't need to have power or batteries or anything. They can just reflect signals that are ambiently going through your home to send a signal to your phone that says your keys are on the couch.
Right, like your couch would text your phone and be like, hey, dude, you left your keys here.
Wow. Yeah, no, that's a great, I mean, that would save me so much time and sanity. I would love that. Well, you know, this has been a fun conversation. We definitely acknowledge the fact that batteries have been kind of a stumbling block for a lot of the technology that could be all around us right now if it weren't for the fact that it's pretty power hungry and we don't have the power to supply to them.
But I think also people should remember to be grateful for how amazing batteries are today. You don't even think about it. You've got a cell phone that you can carry around with you without plugging in and it will work for hours.
Have
that
you
is amazing.
Your batteries today?
So, yeah, we're going to wrap this up. But thank you for coming along with us on our journey down Electric Avenue, which actually is in Atlanta, by the way. There isn't an Electric Avenue in Atlanta. I've been down it. But anyway, thanks so much for coming along with us. We're really excited about these kind of topics, you know, the challenging things in the future that seem to be pretty simple on the surface, but as you start to dig down, you realize, oh, so these are real, you know, science and engineering issues that lots of smart people are working very hard on to try and get the next development so that we're not held back by some fundamental issue from our potential. So if you guys have any potential, electricity joke, if you guys have any suggestions for future topics of forward thinking, you should let us know. Send us an email. Our address is fwthinking@discovery.com, or drop us a line on Twitter, Facebook, or Google+. Our handle at all three is fwthinking, and we will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this topic and the future of technology, visit forwardthinking.com. Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, guys. Back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Tenor girl go shopping.
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.